I can say it again. We both have equally nice voices to listen to.
Do you really think that?
Yes.
You think my voice is equally as nice as yours?
They are on par. Yes, absolutely. And that's not my second time saying that.
Let the record show that Victoria Canal thinks that my voice sounds equally as good as hers.
Your talking voice, yeah.
Oh. Right.
Go. Let's go.
If I were you, I would sing at Victoria.
Wow. Okay. You know what this is giving is that guy on TikTok that like catches every celebrity while they're walking out of a hotel or something and sings to them, and he's not very good. I'm not saying you're not very good.
Is he creepy too? Is he ugly also? is this exactly what it reminds
you
of?
He's like a very unappealing person.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just fucking with you.
Interview over.
I really feel like you, I don't know very much about you, but I think you're very quickly turning into who I want to be when I grow up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now we're on the podcast. No, I'm just kidding. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. It's like I always really love seeing people who are just friends with everyone in music, and also like have their fingers in a lot of different pies. Is that the saying? I feel like that's not even the
saying. No, yeah. It is, yeah.
And you like not only do this, but you do the jam like jams. The jams?
Yeah,
and
all of them.
Yeah, and I don't know. You're just like very thoroughly involved in the music world in a way that I respect. And ever since I was a kid, I feel like I was very lonely and kind of bullied at school and stuff like that, and kind of shunned. And then I found music and found musicians. And ever since then, I just realized that musicians are just like the best crew in the world, because we're all kind of nerdy and spend way too much time like micro focused on this craft. And then once in a while we like kind of bump shoulders, and it's just like really nice to see that we're all in the same boat. So anyway, you feel like a community creator, and I respect you for that. So in an earnest,
that is so sweet
way of saying I want to be you when I grow up.
Oh my God, Victoria, thank you so much. That means a lot, because I'm a real life fan.
Oh, thanks, babe.
I love what you do.
Thank you.
I love what you do.
Thanks.
The podcast
has begun.
Can now begin. In 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen. What is up, everybody? Welcome to the show. We're having a good time over here. Sitting with me is an unbelievably talented woman who I am a genuine fan of. She has the voice of an angel, whether it's singing or talking. As long as that mouth has words coming out of it, it's nice to hear. Ladies and gentlemen, make a lot of noise for the incredible Victoria Canal.
Is part of it. What other buttons you got on there?
Oh,
you're saving it.
Be patient.
Okay.
We're gonna.
Is there a beer, 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 beer?
No, there isn't. It's overplayed.
All right.
Well. Do I look like a DJ?
Kinda. You can pass for a DJ.
We're going with the. I don't know if that's a compliment. Actually, it is. Most DJs, I would say, are attractive.
Yeah, like pretty far along in his career. That's the vibe you're giving me, like a DJ. That's
like a mid 50s balding DJ. further along in his career.
No, like, you know, you dress like you would go to like a corporate event wearing what you're wearing now.
Whatever. This is getting worse. What? Corporate event.
I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's always like the guy that's like not in the suit, and I feel like that guy's always like a DJ that like has a successful touring career, but also like maybe has a kid.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, it is a compliment. I'm trying.
I get where the intention went.
I do have a terrible reputation of of giving people what I think is a compliment and then being like, what? I don't know how to take that. And I'm like, no, it was genuinely like, I think it's very cool.
It's like, oh, I like what you're wearing. That's cool. You could wear that to like a corporate event.
No, I'm saying you are the cool guy. You're the cool guy at the corporate event. You're the one that wouldn't wear a suit because he's like, I'm cool. I've got a watch on.
You know? Bam.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Moving on. Let's talk about me now.
You're making me insecure. Let's talk about body dysmorphia. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Okay. So I know you have tons of fans, right? Oh. And I'm a fan. We've been following each other for years. So it's nice for us to actually get to hang. We've met before, but not like gotten the hang. I feel like this is, this is the hang. This is my favorite thing. My show is pretty much just the hang. Because I have so many questions for you. Like, I want to know more about you. Mm-hmm. I know all of your music and I know your social media personality. And I know that we both love Andrew.
Yes.
Your manager. So
I love Andrew.
We love Andrew. Shout out to Andrew right from the start of the pod.
he's going to eat that up. Yeah. He's going to love that.
Let's take that clip. Social media post. So for people who are unaware, Victoria, I already said it, voice of an angel, unbelievable songwriter, amazing artist, growing bigger, bigger, bigger. And I feel like it's all organic and it's real. And then when I went and saw you play at the Novo, I saw how much your fans love you. And it's so great because it was just you playing either guitar or keys and singing soft songs.
Yeah.
In a standing room of 1,000 or 1,500, however many people. So for them to be quiet is the hardest thing that you can do to a standing room crowd. And then when you finish the song, they're loud for you. And then you're talking and they listen. So like you have control. Oh, like people are engaged, which is just amazing. And I think obviously it comes with your lyrics, which are quite sad. And
sometimes. Most of the time.
Most of the time. Yeah. It's okay. But you're very happy. It seems.
That's where I let it out, you know?
But I love what you do. And then, I just found out recently, but I guess this has already been happening. So like good old Chris Martin from Coldplay. Okay. I want to know the story because I don't know the story, but all I know is that Chris Martin, Coldplay, one of the other gods.
What are the other gods?
Well, there's you, the angel, and him, the god.
Oh.
Right. I guess it's not the gods.
Always the angel, never the god. Do you know that lyric?
No.
It's a Boy Genius song.
Oh.
Always an angel, never a god. It's like a TikTok thing.
Damn. I thought I was being all profound. Turns out I'm just saying a TikTok lyric.
No, it's kind of amazing that you made that. But also it's like kind of deep. Anyway, go on.
This is great. Chris Martin, the god. Victoria Canal, the angel. So Chris Martin said that your song, Swan Song, is one of the greatest songs ever written.
Yeah, crazy.
Love that song. I want to go through the lyrics later. So like...
I can tell you that story if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Okay. So, and also I want to go back to the show in a second.
Wait, oh, we're off the show now? Yeah. Show over. Hold on, guys. Let me tell you about Swan Song.
No, I meant the show, like the Novo show, the concert.
Welcome to the pod.
Podcast is happening.
We do whatever we want on this one.
Yes.
Okay. Hope you're laughing at home.
All right.
You're telling me about your song Swan Song.
Yes.
Which, if you haven't heard it, hit pause. Go listen to it right now. Welcome back to the show. You just listened to Swan Song. Action.
Okay. Action.
Most people have heard it. It's got millions of streams. Beautiful song.
Thank you so much. Well, okay. So Chris initially got sent one of my videos because I had posted a April Fool's Rolling Stone edit of me on the cover. And the subtitle thingy was like, Chris Martin or Victoria Canal wows Chris Martin at a clown's birthday party. And he invites her on tour with Coldplay forever and ever for a million years. And so that was the April Fool's post.
Yeah.
And I had actually posted it in college and then found it in one of those like time repost things that was like, remember this? And I was like, that's hilarious and so cringe. And so I posted it on my Instagram. Turns out this guy, Dan McCarroll, who worked at the time for Amazon Music.
Yeah.
He, saw that and had been following me for a bit and was like, man, I bet it would make her day to send Chris one of her videos. So he ended up sending Chris a cover of Regina Spektor, Samson, that I had done just like a couple days before that. And Chris texted back immediately and was like, holy shit, we have to get in touch with her. Like, how can we help her? She looks amazing. Like, she sounds amazing. And then eventually he got in touch with Andrew. So Andrew got like a cold text from Chris Martin and he called me and I was like, what are you talking about? That's definitely fake, especially because Dan Dan's email when he got in touch to be like, hey, Chris Martin's trying to get in touch with you. It was like, Dan the Man 69 at like Hotmail, whatever. So I was like, that's definitely not real.
Yeah.
But then turns out, you know, sure enough, a few days after that, Chris Martin himself FaceTimed me and I totally like bombed the FaceTime. I was so like nervous. I was like kind of on the verge of tears. He asked me where I was from. I kind of lied about where I was from and I just didn't really know what to do because he's this guy. I mean, Chris is like my songwriting hero. He always has been. Always
for sure.
Has been. Yeah, like just the songwriter of all songwriters and so formative for me, that first Coldplay record and the second one and all of them.
And everyone.
Yeah. So anyway, all that to say that he ended up asking me if I wanted to be signed to a label. And I said, you know, I've never done that before and I am interested. I live in London. He's like, I work with a label in London. They're called Parlophone. You should meet them. So he set up a meeting with the head of Parlophone and it all went from there. And I had sent him demos. On the end of the call, I was like, okay, it was nice to meet you. Bye, I guess. And he was like, send me demos. And in my mind, I sent them to him and he didn't respond for like a week. And I was like, I fucked it up and my music is so bad and I suck. And one of the songs was Swan Song. And then one day he responded and he was like, holy shit, Victoria, Swan Song is like the most special song I've ever heard. And I shat myself. And then that's the one that he was like, we should show this to Parlophone. And it all went from there. And now it's like one of my most popular songs. So,
wow. Okay, this is incredible. I want to like double click in on, because this is a feeling that I think so many people can relate to, which is sending your songs to people is vulnerable, right?
Oh my God, the worst.
Especially to Chris Martin.
Exactly. To this day, I like don't send him nearly as much as I should.
So you send him a song, like even just sending someone a text message and them not responding makes you be like, oh God, am I bad?
Yes.
Did I say the wrong thing? So
yeah.
Sending your song that you pour your heart into and then you like send it to Chris Martin, who you look up to, and he doesn't respond that week.
Yeah.
You're going through in your mind, like, I blew my biggest opportunity.
My biggest opportunity. Like, I just threw away my career because I sent him the wrong thing or something. You know what I mean? But he's like, that's actually, I feel like people make these assumptions about the way they're coming across. And in the end, you're not actually being very generous about how the other person is.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you're assuming that they are as short-sighted as to say, oh, I don't like that. Like, say he didn't like it. You know, say he didn't love the song, he would give me another chance because I'm more than just one song as an artist. And I think that's a thing that artists really kind of like struggle with right now is that they think that they're sort of like, they have to prove everything within 15 seconds of a song. And it's like, that's not what artistry is. Artistry is supposed to be little pieces of yourself in everything
and
a lifetime of work. You know what I mean? So it's tough to sort of like feel confined by that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then you finally do get the response and he doesn't just respond, but he responds with,
yeah,
this is unbelievable.
This is my favorite song I've ever heard.
So then you go from so low to so high.
So high. And that's life, man.
That's life.
That's this life in particular. When you're a performer and you're like exposing your innermost like thoughts and creativity, like that is the life you're signing up for. And gosh, you really have to learn how to have some like grounded rituals that keep you somewhere in the middle during it all. Because,
oh my God.
Goddamn, if you rely on like the outside world for your sense of self, it's a very difficult time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? Yeah.
I keep thinking about that Rick Rubin clip that's been floating around being like, don't do it for the audience.
Yeah.
You know, and that's such a great quote. Like,
so true.
Do it for you. Try to make the best thing you can every time.
Yeah. And I think to add to his statement, like I think for a lot of artists, the audience isn't the general public. It's the people that you respect that already make music that maybe you know are aware of you. So then you're like, what will I do that like pleases this like legend or whatever?
Yes.
And that's like another version of doing it for the audience is like, what will Blake Mills think of me? Or what will Chris Martin think of me or whatever? And it's like, actually, you just have to do like what moves you.
Absolutely. I mean? Whether you're an artist, an athlete, whatever it is, that's how you choke in the moment, right? Playing live. Oh, I got to make it perfect. Miss a note, whatever it is. It's like, oh, and then instead of just like embracing you and how special you are and how unique you are. And it's like, there's a reason he came to you in the first place.
Yeah, totally. Also, some of my favorite artists, like my top memories of seeing them live or something is when they have little hiccups or maybe less than perfect moments, you know, or forget that there's a time change or a whatever, or miss the key. It's like, that stuff's like really bonding. It's like really nice to see an artist that's playing to 50,000 people like fuck up. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
We're all just like little humans figuring out the thing.
That's what you call jazz.
Yeah. No. And I do not play jazz for that reason. Way too exposing. Jesus. No, so do you play, right?
I'm a drummer, yeah.
Yeah, you're a drummer. Okay, great.
Oh, yeah.
So do you participate in the jam jams as well?
Oh, yes.
Okay, sweet. Every time?
99%.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that your secret ploy, is to just like be able to play with like every musician in the world?
That's what I was doing before Jam Card.
Okay.
Sweet. Like, you know, Jam Card was just a vehicle to do what I already was doing, but to do it bigger and have it, you know, impact more people.
Yeah.
Essentially, like,
very cool.
Not to go into my story.
That's okay.
This is your story.
We can cut it out.
But yeah. All right. Turn off the pod. I'm a drummer. Yeah. I mean, my story in 10 seconds for context. Started touring when I was 15 years old as a drummer. Was making a living in my teens on it. Got my own apartment like on drums by the time I was 18 or whatever, and toured the world, became a music director. That's like why Christina Perry was the previous episode. I was Christina's music director for a few years.
Awesome.
But I played with Skrillex and a bunch of people.
Cool.
Yeah. A bunch of people I really love. And then as a music director, I was always looking for people, always hiring people, always throwing jams. I would throw jams and throw concerts, but then I also had a studio in Hollywood that everyone would come to every night, and whether it was just a drummer or a songwriter or whatever it was, and we would play all night, every night.
Awesome.
Just us. But it was never documented, and I was always like, man, we should be documenting this. Because hundreds of incredible artists and musicians, like some of the best ever, all came through, and like we created together, played together, jammed together, talked together, whatever it was. So then started Jam Card to make an app and a network for more musicians and songwriters and producers to find each other and get gigs and hire each other.
Yeah.
And then we started, and then the Jam Jam was like, oh, here, let's do a jam that could actually be a real global thing, collaborative thing in the round. So there's no front person, everyone's equal, all line of sight. And then our movies and our everything that's happened since then is just like, let's put a camera on these incredible things and tell other people's stories. And then now the pod is just the most laxed version of that, where I just talk to people that I respect and love.
Yeah, sweet.
That's it.
So I wonder, because I also started touring pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 18 when I went on my first like international tour.
Yeah.
Just as support and then living on the bus. But when I was like 15-ish, I was studying at a conservatory. And like I said, it was the first time that I kind of made friends that I was like, oh, these people like me. And it's because of like what I do. And I think that sort of in some way set me up for a life of like in the best way, overcompensation for the way I was as a teenager. Like I was deeply unpopular, felt deeply unattractive, like deeply invisible. And then by like pursuing music and making friends in music, I felt like over time I was like putting on this armor of like, actually I matter as a person, and like people see me and they respect me, and oh, if I get this accolade, then like I walk in a room and everybody knows who I am.
Yep.
And it's like, to a certain extent, I wonder for you, like, is that part of your, like, do you think the overcompensation is like part of it for you, or were you always just like, I play music and it just happens to be that I like to hang out with musicians? Or has this been your way to like kind of feel good about yourself? You know, it might be kind of an exposing question,
but. No, I'm very honest, and it's a great question, and I appreciate it. And I think the answer is yes to start. Like, I'm 39, and I've like gotten into a place in my career in the recent years, at least, where I've realized my worth, right, and what I'm good at and my value.
Away from music
and with music, and both. With music. Okay, both.
Nice. Yeah.
But coming up as a kid, same thing. I was overweight, felt deeply not attractive.
Yeah.
Never
I was
had
disabled.
It.
So yeah. Like, God damn. I feel you there.
Whatever it is, whether it's like a disability or just you as yourself do not feel confident in your looks.
Yeah.
Whether overweight, whatever. I was like, I had like a mustache when I was like 10. I was like, what the hell? Like,
wispy one?
Too much testosterone. you know, like, I had really bad teeth. Yeah. I got braces later, but like all the things, like, yeah, you know, and so for whatever it was, yeah, I didn't. So I did become obsessed with drums at a young age just because I did. I don't even know why. I just fell in love with the drums and became obsessed and just gave it my all. Maybe because I also didn't have that many distractions because I wasn't attractive in going to parties. I was just literally would go home from school and play drums all day until my neighbors would scream at 8 p.m.
That was the same for me. It was like every day, lunchtime, after school, till I went to bed, like playing on Logic, just practicing piano, like lonely. But then, like you said, it's like it starts out with the love for the thing, and then you realize that actually it can somehow impact your social life.
Yeah.
And then over time, you stay in it because you're in it for the right reasons to begin with. You just love the music.
Yes.
And then the social aspect is just like a plus. But
yes,
yeah, I find that so interesting. There's a podcast that I love listening to that's all about like people, like successful people's like middle school years.
Mm.
And it's really interesting because...
What's it called?
It's called Pod Crushed.
Pod Crushed. Nice.
It's Penn Badgley's podcast.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. And it's like, it's really cool because he interviews people like Conan or Matthew McConaughey or whatever. And it's like, you know, Conan's very thing, for example, that he was insecure about in school was like being tall and lanky and having red hair and being kind of goofy and loud. And those are the very things that he's like used, played to his strengths, you know, to then become like a very iconic person.
Yeah.
And I think, I've also been in the journey because I'm 25 now and I'm definitely like in peak like mid-20s crisis, like quarter life crisis mode. I'm coming out on the other side feeling like an adult for the first time.
Great.
Which is very exciting to
me.
And like, you know, having pride in self-care and like, I don't know, just treating myself as a person who has worth despite like whatever's going on in my career or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting to like reflect on what it is about me that I used to be so embarrassed about that now is just part of me and actually is like a good part of me. You know what I mean? Like being wholesome.
Absolutely.
Or being, you know, kind of, I don't know what even I am, like emotional or shy or awkward or these things that actually can really endear a person to others because it's my walls are always pretty much down. You know? I'm not going to be performing, you know, I've been going to Grammy week stuff all week and it's like, I have a really hard time with like trying to connect with people when everyone's got like a face on.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to really like, just like, I have to be myself until the person in front of me is actually themselves too. And
yes.
I feel like it's almost like I have to like encourage them to be like, it's okay.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But that's an amazing thing for you to be the message to do that.
Mm.
'Cause so little people do that, especially in the music industry.
Mm-mm.
So many people have up these shells or these personas that are from whatever insecurity they have in growing up. And also because, I mean, you have like the artist side of the music industry and then you have the business side, right? So
totally.
Both sides are insecure in different ways, right?
We're all insecure.
Everyone's insecure. But what I mean, like, but I feel like when you're in entertainment, I don't know. I feel like people in entertainment are driven to that even from a lot of their insecurities and maybe proving to themselves or to whoever.
Yeah.
I am someone, I am something, I can do something.
I know.
TV, radio, but music, whatever stream. Like,
yeah. And I like, find that funny and bonding at the same time when I go to this kind of stuff.
But what I love about your personality is that I think spending time with you, even a short amount of time, makes someone feel like, oh, I could be myself with this person.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is an amazing thing to do. And I hope that I do that too. That's a goal of mine with
people. You totally do that. Yeah.
And I think part of that is just your own humility and being like, oh, I'm just going to be me. You're like, when someone is authentic, you can feel it. Like people,
and it allows for other people to be authentic as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So authenticity mixed with passion and then persistence, because you have to have that because it's this.
Yes.
So you have to be persistent when you're in this.
Oof.
And because it will go back to that.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
What was like your lowest point in your career?
In my career?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely was. Okay. So when I was 30, I was drumming musical director and I felt like I kind of hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
Like I was doing arena tours all the time. I had albums charting as a session drummer. I was like doing my thing and I was like, oh, I want to start this other project being Jam Card. So then I quit everything that I was my whole career and took the leap of faith to start Jam Card without telling people what I'm starting. I was just like, I'm starting something new, but I'm like not available. I'm not touring. I'm not recording. Everyone was like, what are you doing? Right.
Yeah.
Then I tried to start a tech company, which I had zero knowledge on how to do that and zero connections. I had, didn't know any engineers. I didn't know any investors. I didn't know any business people in that world.
Truly no starting founders, over.
Truly starting over at 30 coming off. And I got to say, as hard as it is to make a living in music, for me, I naturally just give it my all and go in. And so luckily, even though it was a journey, I was still progressing every year.
Yeah.
In my journey in terms of, you know, income and whatever accomplishments. And mm-hmm. So by the time I was 30, I had a big network of people. I had constant work, right? Luckily.
Yeah.
So then starting Jam Card, I was like, okay. So I went in and put all my money into Jam Card.
Yeah.
And after a year, still didn't have the app done, couldn't figure it out. It was super hard. I couldn't get the app right. After 2 years, still couldn't get the app done. After 3 years, I'm broke.
Wow.
And literally, I remember one night on my mom's couch, I went over to my mom's, and it was me, my mom, my little brother. And I was just like sitting there trying to test this app and it wasn't fucking working, the version one of Jam Card app. And I started crying. I was just like, fuck, why is this so hard? Who would have thought it would be this hard to make an app? Isn't it easy? I just couldn't get it right. I was trying. I'd spent all my money and I had raised a little bit of money from investors. My first time taking money from an investor, which is like a pressure thing. Spent all that money. Didn't have a product still.
Yeah.
And I was just like, gosh, that was for sure the lowest point in my career because I was just like, fuck, I've failed. You know, like, I'm trying. So then I went back on tour. Because I always felt that I could turn that switch back on, even if it was a couple years later and be like, yo, I'm available. Put me on a gig.
So like, you're like 33.
I'm 33.
Back on the road.
I'm 33. I go back on the road, keep doing Jam Card without telling anybody in the background. I'm on the bus. I went on tour with Juliette Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
You know her?
I'm not familiar, but that's okay.
The actress Juliette Lewis, she's like Academy Award winning actress and she's actually like got a punk rock band. She's a singer. She's fucking so sick. She's awesome. Like Janis Joplin 2.0. Tyler. She's a badass.
Amazing.
I went on tour with her. Christina Perry did some dates with Billy Joel in Stadium. So I did that with her.
Amazing.
I went back with Christina after not doing it for years.
Wow.
And then I filled in on drums with Andrew Watt, and met Christian Paul Meadows, who ended up becoming like number two of Jam Card years later or months later, whatever. And then, and Post Malone. And like, those were like the gigs, right? And, but I was literally, everyone else is partying, you know, doing whatever. And I was going to bed early, waking up, making Jam Card. Like people would get up on the bus hours after I'd already been awake. Like, what are you doing? I'm just like in the front lounge. Like what? You know, like
don't look
after sound check. Everyone goes and starts drinking. I'm like in catering, like trying to fucking figure this thing out. And then, so I just did like 6 months of touring, saved up some more money, kept going, finally figured it out, got a new tech team. Like I got my first technical advisor released. And then February 2017 released the actual everyone thinks is the first version of Jam Card, which is actually my third attempt after 3 years of hitting a wall.
Wow.
And it worked.
Wow.
Let me long story short. So, but was down there. And if I didn't persevere, I would have just fucking quit then.
Yeah.
Be like, that's it. I tried. I spent all my money and now I have to just build again as a drummer and I'm 33.
Back to where you were before.
Back to where I am before. Yeah. And like letting, hey guys, I'm back. You know, like what happened? Like, where were you for the last 3 years? Oh, I tried doing this thing. It didn't really work. But I kept going and now, I mean, my whole life has changed and like, I'm like, hyped on life. Yeah.
That is so cool. You know, the reason I ask is because you said you're 39.
Yeah.
So I have a couple musician friends in their early 40s.
Yeah.
And it's really like important for me and valuable for me to like talk to people like you who still have a career in music and in fact have even prospered like so much more in their 30s than they did in their 20s.
Oh my God. Yeah.
There's such a pressure to like, to fulfill all your goals and reach a certain point in your career, like the peak when you're in your early 20s, which is just like, and then I don't know, there's a fear that maybe having a long and sustainable career in music is impossible.
Yeah.
I have this one friend, John, He lives in London. His name is John Hopkins, and he's in his early 40s. And he's such an important friend to me because for many reasons, but one of which is that he reminds me that I still have plenty of time. And he's like, man, I didn't put out my first album until I was like 33. And my whole 20s, I was like touring and kind of trying to figure it out, but I lived with my parents and I didn't figure it out until like, and you know, now he's like living very well and he records on all the Coldplay records and he has an incredible DJ career of his own. And, I don't Amazing. Know. Yeah. And it's like, it all happened like post 35, you know what I mean? So
yes.
it's pretty cool, to think that careers can last a lifetime and it's not like you have to be doing like the most impressive or, sort of outward facing, like successful thing when you're in your 20s, like you
yes.
have plenty of time for the peaks and valleys and it's not linear. And, I like to be reminded of that. And that's why I asked you, because I think there are moments when I'm like, man, I wish I was Best New Artist nominee this year or whatever. And it's like, there are so many ways to have a beautiful career in music. And it does not have to happen by the time you're fucking 23.
And you don't even know, like, I'm right now the most in flow I've ever been. So there's things that I want.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't happen.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, all right.
Yeah.
And there's other things I didn't even see coming that hit me, opportunity. I'm like, oh, sick.
Yes, totally. Oh,
you
my
know,
God.
So I'm just like, okay, shit, that was not on my plan for the year. Like, we're doing this whole education thing with Jam Card right now called School Gig, massive thing we could talk about separately, but did not see that coming. That was just an opportunity that came in because I'm on my journey. And when you're on your journey and you're on your path and you're authentic, you treat people well and you're passionate and you're resilient, like,
it works out in the end.
People are going to bring you shit. Yeah, it keeps going, whether it takes a month, a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And like, I got to say, specifically to what you were just talking about. So when I was like 18 on tour, I thought I was like, you know, living, like, I was like, this
you
is as good
it.
As it gets. Yeah. I mean, even though I was making like $1,000 or whatever, I was still so stoked, you know, like, and my dad told me, he was like, you have no idea, dude, like, how much longer your journey is going to go. And I thought that my band that I was in, I was like, no, I'm going to be in this band forever.
Right.
He's like, no, you're not. You're going to be in, I'm a drummer, different than being an artist, right? But he was like, you're going to play with a ton of people. You're going to be in a ton of bands. And he said to me, he was like, your 20s are for just like experimenting and seeing what you like, trying things, having fun, fucking around. Your 30s are for going super hard and building.
Whoa.
And then your 40s, life starts getting good. That was what my dad told me. And at the time I looked at him, I was like, you're crazy.
You're old.
And like, you know, kind of is exactly what's happened to me. Like my 20s was, I was like, okay, I'm drumming. Okay, now I was doing my own bands. Then I started throwing concerts for the first time. Then I started musical directing and playing for other artists, right? And then I started being a session player. I was trying things. And then 30s, started Jam Card. I've been grinding for a decade.
Yeah.
Working really hard for all my 30s. Now like, 40 is about to hit and the back half of my 30s, 37, 38, 39 are by far the best years of my life.
Wow.
By far. And I had a pretty dope life in my 20s. I'm like, I was touring the world.
Yeah.
You know.
Totally.
Like just doing my thing, whatever. And so this is different. Don't get me wrong. Now the first 3 years of my 30s was the worst part.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Or the hardest. I won't say worst. There were other beautiful things that happened, but the hardest part.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So, and don't get me wrong. There's been so many difficult things through Jam Card. Like problems happen all the time. That's what being an entrepreneur is, whether you are an entrepreneur in business or an entrepreneur in music. Because
totally.
If you are an artist, as you are, you are the CEO of your company. Your
you
company
sound like my dad.
It's Victoria Canal.
Dude, I literally, since day one, my dad was like, look, you have to have two brains, your artist brain and your CEO brain.
Yes.
If you want to do this, if you want to make a living in this, you got to figure out how to monetize. You got to figure out what your like flows, because he's a business guy.
Yes.
So he's like, what are your different modes of income? Like, what is your business model? What is your budget? Like, what do you want your life to look like? What do you want your business to look like?
Yeah.
And how can it grow? You know, and he was like really, really influential in terms of me understanding that I take full responsibility of my business.
And it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
Your dad's awesome. He knows what's up.
He knows what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, even for, I think a lot of people, especially when I meet young artists, they're like, I'm like, what's up? Like, I just want to sign to a label, you know, like have them do, I don't want to do any, I just want to like make music.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
whatever.
I know so many artists that are like, Don't even tell me the numbers. I don't want to know what's going on. They don't even know how much their producer is getting paid. It's like, you know, that can't, in my opinion, that's not cool.
You're not setting yourself up for success. You're setting yourself up to be taken advantage of.
So true.
It's going to be that much easier for anyone, not saying that they will, but anyone could take advantage of you if you're like turning your head to everything besides writing or performing or whatever. And it's like, your label and your manager, great. Get a label, get a manager. I hope they're the best people ever for you. They work for you.
Yeah.
They work for you. It is your job to lead them with vision. Now they execute and you hope that you can rely on them to lead on things and bring you stuff and represent you well.
Yeah, but you're the boss.
But you're the boss.
Yeah.
And they're going to represent you well the better that you coach them on how you want to be represented.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's such a good point. It's like, they do, in fact, represent you. So it's not only about getting taken advantage of, but also how you come across to other people in the music world. Like, you want to be sure that people are on good terms with you. And sometimes if you don't even, for example, know what someone's getting paid that you're working with, or you don't know exactly what's going on in terms of your books, like, that can really like piss some people off. And you could be totally oblivious to that for maybe years until they come back and be like, hey, you never paid me for this thing. And you're like, huh? Like, I had people taking care of that. I didn't know about that. You know what I mean? It's like, actually, you should know about that because it's your job, you know?
You're going to be more successful. Like, when you look at the artists that also have that other side of their mind and control their shit, who do you get? You then get Beyonce, you get Jay-Z, you get Taylor Swift.
Right.
You get those kind of artists.
Totally. Yeah. And I do think the parenting has a lot to do with it, to be completely honest.
Yes.
When I look at those examples, like, I feel like there were parents that were like, you got to be on your shit. And it's like, you got to take responsibility for this, you know, every step of the way. And it's a growing, building thing, very gradual. Don't give up, like all these different values. I feel so grateful that both my parents raised me on that like entrepreneurial spirit. You know, I think my dad actually never got the chance to like start his own company. So he was maybe just trying to instill the entrepreneurial spirit in me because he never got to do it himself. He was definitely like a successful business guy, but never crossed over to starting his own thing. And so it feels like I'm kind of like taking a bit of his legacy, but in my own way.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Definitely doing it in your own way.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, wow, you actually did it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You are doing it.
Yeah.
Here's a great thing. That Jimmy Jam told me on this podcast, and I think about all the time to share with you in case you haven't seen that episode, which I also highly recommend because Jimmy Jam is the man.
Cool.
He's in his 60s. He has been making it for 40, 50 years, right? He's been at the top. He's had number one hits, all this kind of stuff. And his whole thing that he said is, he's like, I don't like feeling like I've made it.
Yeah.
Made it is past tense.
Yeah.
I like feeling like I'm making it.
Woo.
He's in his 60s, still has that mentality, and still has hit songs.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I'm making it.
Yes. So good.
Because everyone's like, no, I just want to make it. I want to have a million. I want to have a whatever this thing is. It's like.
Yeah. I want to have gotten there. Yeah. It's so true. Chris is the same way. He's like exactly always just so excited to just keep making. And I love that actual, that saying I'm making it is like, it kind of translates to several different meanings. It's not just like I've made it. Like success wise, it's just like I'm creating, and that's the life that I want and I'm signing up for no matter what happens.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm making shit. You know what I mean? It's good stuff. Wisdom. Got to listen to that episode.
Sorry. Oh man. He drops bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen to the older established people in your life.
Yeah.
They know what's up.
Exactly.
Listen to them.
So true. So true. Intergenerational friendships. Truly. I think like in all like earnestness, it's like having friends that are not your age is a very useful thing.
Yes.
Younger and older.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So, wow, we've gone all over the place.
I know.
It's fun.
ADHD conversations.
We're just doing the hang. It's the hang. Welcome to my house.
Welcome to the podcast. It starts now.
It starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, Victoria Canal.
You said you were going to show me what else you got in there little by little. Trickle it out. It's time for the second one, I think.
Okay. I want you to tell me a real serious story about yourself.
How do I follow that?
You do it.
It's a Western. Well, it was a late night in Atlanta. 1932. My grandma had just contracted the man next door.
Wait, I want a real story.
Okay. I don't even know where I was going with that. Oh, man. Okay, a real serious story. Well, what do you want to know about?
Let's talk about your romantic life. I'm sorry.
I think you should use the other button for that one. Yeah, my romantic life. That's more accurate. Yeah.
I hear you're a pansexual.
Bling. Pansexual.
What does that mean?
Yeah. What does that mean? Good question. You know, anything goes pretty much.
There we go.
Yeah. If you're a cool person, I'm pretty much open to the vibes, you know.
I also heard you crush on people a lot.
Oh, who told you that? Was it Andrew? My manager be spilling some tea.
I heard it
me.
On an interview. It wasn't Andrew.
Okay.
Yeah, Andrew was like, Victoria was born in Germany. She crushes on people a lot. That was the first.
Dude, I crush on everybody. This industry, there's just so many like outgoing, like wonderful people that are soulful and affectionate and friendly. And yeah, I crush.
So like,
well, I can't know, like I name anyone. I can't name anyone.
I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. But just imagine anyone. And I've probably had a crush on them like ever so briefly, harmlessly, a very, very innocently a crush. But I also, I'm having this, funny, this is probably way TMI, but I'm having this funny like experiment with myself the last year, because like I was telling you, being unpopular in school, like no boys noticed me. I didn't even know I was interested in girls at the time. Mm-hmm. Or anyone else for that matter. And I think I always like crushed on the most popular boys just because they were popular.
Yeah.
And because they had like blue eyes or whatever. And so I have some horror stories about like, you know, like I was just telling my best friend about this. There was this kid, Aiden. Sorry, Aiden, if you listen to this. I think he's a DJ now, but
he's fine. He's a DJ.
Yeah, he's fine.
Continue.
But anyway, he was the prettiest boy in school, and it was Valentine's Day, and I wrote a Valentine's note on, and I put it on his desk where he always sat in this class. And in I think I was in eighth grade or something, maybe ninth grade. And anyway, he was supposed to read it, and it was like a love note being like, you know, I've never knew how to say it, but like, I really like you. And I know that we live not so far from each other. Maybe we could go on a date sometime, and like yours truly, Victoria, whatever, and kind of be mine, you know, like very cute. And turns out that one day this girl, Carla, who was like the popular bitch in the school, she sat down there and read my note aloud to the class. And Aiden was in the corner like bright red. And oh, I was like welling God. Up with tears, and everybody was laughing at me. And oh. It was just horrific. And then he didn't talk to me for the rest of the year until the very end. We like hugged once. And then I was like, phew, okay, that's resolved. But yeah, like the amount of anxiety I had going to school every single day because I knew I had like science class with Aiden or whatever it was.
Oh my God.
Dude, that's not even the only story. There's like, because I moved around so much, there was always a boy at each school that I lived, and that would have been like seven different schools or something.
Right.
In different countries that I would crush. I would single out the most popular boy that I knew I couldn't get and just crush on him the whole year and then feel horribly rejected. All that to say, in my adult life, for some reason, people find me more attractive these days. I've been sort of testing my limits with like, how much can I get away with?
Yes.
So I just like, I go in assuming that I don't have a chance, but somewhere in me, I'm like, the cooler I act, the more myself I act, maybe there's a chance that this very famous or very attractive, like actor or band frontman or whatever will like be attracted to me. And then by some miracle, you know, they have been. So, you know, so I've had some like fun adventures here and there.
Let's go. Let's
which
go.
Is kind of nice. But on the other hand, it's like, it doesn't actually solve all my self-esteem issues to like hook up with the hottest or most popular person I could possibly find.
I suffer from the same thing.
Yeah.
We're very similar people.
Really? It's like, you think that it'll make you feel better about yourself.
Oh my God.
But then if they don't want to like actually date you, even if you didn't want to date them, if they don't want to date you, then it makes you kind of feel bad about yourself afterwards. So anyway.
You know, I've gotten, I think I would say I'm okay with rejection.
Really?
I'm not great with it, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with it. I do move on fast.
I
don't dwell on it.
Yeah, I move on pretty fast.
Yeah. It's just like on to the next.
Actually, I don't know if I move on fast. I feel like I still have feelings for everyone that I've ever had feelings for.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between like having feelings and crushes versus like wanting to like build a life with someone. You know what I mean? And that's a very different thing that frankly I have yet to do, you know, one day.
Yeah.
But
is it if you have like a bad, like something happens, you get rejection and then you're like, oh, I feel bad about this. Don't write a song. I'll have to remember it forever. I'll have to sing it forever. Oh, I'll have to remember.
Yeah.
Sing about what I want to sing. Not about the hurt.
You know what's funny? Oh my God. For so many years, I haven't written about romance at all. Like I was writing, especially like in COVID and stuff, I was like writing about family and grief and like, all of these like identity things and body dysmorphia, body image, yada, yada, yada. But romance and like romantic relationships is something that I'm like just getting back into writing about now. And it feels like uncharted territory for me. It's also like very scary to like be somewhat cliche. You're like, oh my God, I'm writing like, I will always love you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, or whatever the sentiments are that it's like, it just feels so predictable. So I'm trying to let myself just be cliche in my feelings and my songs with the love songs.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. You know, it's all very repetitive.
Absolutely.
You know,
the further you go down and under this journey of pushing yourself to the limits with you're going to have some great experiences. Do that. Everyone do that.
Oh my God. Dude, I literally
shoot your shot.
I met this guy and I won't name any names, but he's like maybe the hottest actor I've ever met in my whole life.
Yeah.
And we like got along really well, and then I was kind of stony baloney, and that night I like sent him a voice message after the thing that we were at, and I was like, hey, I was just wondering, like, are you just to like know, because I never really have a gauge on this, like, are you attracted to me perchance, because it would just be nice to know. But anyway, no worries if not. And then he like liked it and took a couple of days to respond, and then finally he was like, this was hilarious, you're hilarious, and like absolutely yes, I am attracted to you, like I would love to like do something, and you're fun. Funny, and I really love that you're like authentic and funny and yourself, and
you
shine bright, whatever. And so it's like kind of nice, because I literally in a never in a million years would I ever have thought that like that just being myself would be like enough to attract the people that I wish to attract. You know?
Is this just because of your disability?
No, definitely not. It's like, I don't know. I feel like body dysmorphia, it, for me at least, like it's like a lot about my face, it's like about my body shape regardless of my arm, but definitely like feeds into it. That was one of the reasons that I wasn't like really appealing to people at school,
yeah,
and felt like kind of shunned in that regard. But you know, I think I've felt more self-conscious about like my thighs and my face than I have about my arm
in
my life.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's more just the plight of being a woman than it is.
Yeah.
Than it is that.
I'm gonna tell you a secret.
What?
Guys like big thighs. Guys like it.
Yeah.
Men like it. Men like it.
Yeah. But there's also
we're done with the little boys. You're not in high school anymore.
Don't. But look, if you were a woman, you'd understand.
I know.
There's thighs, but then you also have to like have a certain kind of ass, and like if you have like too saggy of an ass, but like big thighs, then maybe that's not appealing enough, or like whatever. And it's fuck me, it's like so exhausting to try.
So you just go to we just do squats.
Weightlifting, or you just be yourself,
or be you.
Do exercise for health and accept your body as it is. And that's kind of like the way that I'm trying to go about it. Because for so many years, I was just like, man, I'm never going to look like what I want to look like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it's crazy because like I meet people at my shows and I have a song called She Walks In where I talk about like comparison and just never feeling like the pretty girl in the room.
Yeah.
You know? And then these girls will come up and I reference in the song, I'm like, talking about the girl that all the heads turn and she's the most beautiful one, and why can't I experience that? Like when people stare at me, they stare at my arm or whatever, and I would love to just be stared at because I'm pretty.
Yeah.
And then at these shows, these girls come up to me and they're like, you're my girl that I compare myself to. And She Walks In, like, that's you cool. are that girl, you know? And it's like so crazy to me that I think most women, like I consider every woman on the planet to be absolutely like divine, gorgeous, like feminine, beauty, amazing, like just holy thing.
Yeah.
Except for me, like how does that work?
Yeah,
and that's how, that's every single woman's experience. Yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah.
I relate to that a lot. As I said, like being an overweight kid growing up, that's when you like develop so much of your insecurities, thoughts of yourself,
self-image.
Yeah. And like, I've always like roller coastered in weight.
Yeah.
And, but I know that like I turned 40 later this year and I'm like, okay, I want to be in the best shape of my life.
Yeah.
Like for what, at that point. So I'm like on that journey towards it right now. And like,
you've been weightlifting.
Yeah. So I've been a combination of intermittent fasting. I walk at least 10,000 steps a day and then I do kind of like HIIT workout style. So I'm not going to the gym and like lifting weights, but I'm in the, my backyard, which is right there. You can't see it on camera, but it's right there. And, you know, whatever, doing planks and pushups and jump rope. And I started boxing actually, which I love.
Very cool.
It kicks my ass.
Yeah.
Literally. And, or it kicks my face. As I get older in general, and I become more and more and more self-aware every day as I get older, I like identifying the things of myself that I don't love and then intentionally working on them. So whether or not it is losing weight or getting stronger in my core, or if it's something that is about my emotional status or my availability or my presence, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think there's, that's a healthy, the healthiest version of like self-improvement. I think there's like a line between that and self-hatred in a way that is about the things that you could never change.
Yeah.
Like for example, my arm.
Yeah.
Like, no, I mean, I can't just like go get an arm, you know what I mean? Like that's, this is something I have to live with my whole life.
Yep.
It's like, so what I actually need to self-improve is like the self-talk about like thinking that people think a certain way about me, or that it's decided that I am an unattractive person, or whatever. It's like, I think your version of it is the kind of self-awareness that helps, because it's, you're like, here's where I need to improve. Mm-hmm. But it's very different to... what a lot of people struggle with, just hating things about themselves that they could never change.
So yes, and I should have prefaced with, I do always ask myself, is this something I can change?
Right.
So for example, wish I was taller, not a tall guy. I don't even think about that, you know, because there's nothing I can do about it. So like,
I haven't thought about that for you at all.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It's like, you're thinking you might be having that thought.
Yeah. So if you look at actually at the top of my whiteboard, look at, this is a simple statement that I look at every single day. Does it matter? Yes. Do it. Does it matter? No. Don't even think about it.
Love it. I saw that before. I really love that.
So that, this is in my office. So that's related to a lot of a problem or a situation or a thing, but that goes, that's the exact same thing of, is this something that you have control over or not?
Yeah.
Right. So whether it is, the thought is like, oh, I was taller. Can't do that. All right. Not even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wish my core was stronger. Okay. I'm going to work on that. It's going to take a while and I need to be persistent.
Right.
But I'm going to do it. And then eventually it gets easier.
And that makes you feel good about yourself when you're like accomplishing things that are hard. Right.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You ever gotten into ice bathing? Like cold?
Not there yet. Oh Lord. Everyone's addicted to it.
Yeah, like, yeah. But dude, by the time you turn 40, you should be into that, because like, that's like the next thing. If you're looking for self-improvement, doing that every day is like the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I was just looking at your books and there's a lot of like commonalities. I love the culture map. It's a great book. I feel like that book is really good for understanding cultural differences.
And which is so important. People should be prioritizing that and not just being American wherever they go.
Yeah.
can be very disrespectful.
Yeah. I know. Because I didn't actually grow up in the States. So I definitely like coming here. There are many cultural qualities that are like deeply American that people do. I just heard this thing where you can really identify an American in a foreign country, just by looking for whoever's leaning, because Americans love to lean.
Wow. We're lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everyone else is standing up straight.
Yeah. 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 And like,
and we're like,
and we're like the first to lean, like in any situation, we'll find the thing to lean on. Isn't that interesting?
God, I love leaning.
I love to lean. And it gives you like a certain sort of nonchalant, like, yeah, I'm cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyway, back to the show. What else? What else have you got on there?
I got some serious ones.
Can I try one?
I got some funny ones. Sure. I just had Christina Perry on the show, and that was loaded from. I was fucking with her.
Oh my god! That's hilarious.
I was like, you're my best friend. I love spending time with you.
So funny.
Her and I go, like, she's my best friend. Yeah.
Really?
Like, yeah.
To this day?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah. I'll be with her on Sunday and her two daughters. I'm Uncle Elmo.
Oh, you guys are going to the ceremony?
No, we're gonna watch it at her house.
Oh, nice.
So I went the last 4 years to the Grammys, and then I was like, I'm not nominated. What am I doing? I need to earn this. So I'm not gonna go this year or ever again until
you're nominated?
I got a nomination.
Okay, wow.
So I'm gonna watch it at Christina's house with the kids.
Great.
It'll be fun.
That'll be fun. That's so cool.
I would love to introduce you to Christina.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love her. She's so cool.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's the other thing I was thinking about was like when I think about mentors in my life, I have the like really fortunate like opportunity to interact with like a lot of amazing successful artists but not that many women role models for me or like mentors.
Oh my God.
For me,
you and Christina are gonna hit it off.
Yeah
because she very much also has gotten to the point where she is unapologetically herself.
That's awesome.
And even with a major label and a this and a that, and you know, she just does whatever she wants to do, really, and it's herself. Like, she had kids and she was like, I don't want to tour anymore, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And then she was like, I'm gonna make a lullaby album for my kid.
So sweet.
And then she did, and the label didn't want it to count as an album. They didn't want to put it out. And then they put it out and it's getting hundreds of millions of streams.
Are you kidding?
And like a billion on TikTok. Of just, and like every, like, cause all parents are playing these lullaby albums for their kids.
Yeah.
And now she's like literally
market.
Created a whole new thing.
Damn. Go off.
Just being like her, what she wanted to do.
Love that for her. Man, it's some little niche projects. Yeah. Love that.
Her and I just dropped a new version of Jar of Hearts with drums. Me on drums.
You on drums?
Yes.
Iconic.
Yeah.
You'll definitely be at the Grammys next year.
Oh yeah. This year, this was different for me too. So being a Leo, you can relate to this probably. We're like a ball of fire, right? As we're a fire sign. And I never let my fire die down. Like I'm pretty much this fire. I wake up like this and then I'm like this all the way until I get tired at the end of the night. And then I'm asleep within 30 minutes of being tired.
Yeah.
I just like pass out, right?
Totally.
I'm not really good at taking breaks or vacations or whatever. So I've been working on getting better at that. So for the Christmas break, or the holiday break, I normally would like travel somewhere, or it'll be like, okay, Hollywood break, holiday break.
Hollywood break.
Hollywood break. It kind of is that, actually. It's a good point. Oh, I like that. So what are you going to do for the Hollywood break?
Yeah.
Like no Hollywood for 2 weeks, no Grammy parties. If it's a break, I'll be like, oh, cool, I have 5 days off. I'll go make an album.
Yeah.
You know, which, because I don't consider that work.
Totally.
Zooms are work. And for this holiday break, I did nothing. Like I normally will travel somewhere or do something. I did nothing. I stayed here, stayed home, just like hung with my family, like my brother and a couple friends, not even that many. And did nothing. And I let my fire die down for the first time ever. And I didn't really like it, actually. I felt like very maybe
low.
Vulnerable and low. Yeah. And then I kind of felt, which I never feel low. I thank God I'm very lucky. I don't suffer from any sort of depression or anything. Like,
wow.
Even when hard times come, which is all the time, I literally, my dad told me when I was young that stress is an option. It's a choice reaction to a situation.
Sounds like my dad.
Wow. We got to introduce them too.
Yeah.
And you and Christina. Yeah. Dads.
Dads. Stoic dads.
They'll probably not even like each other. They'll be like, well, I already know everything you're saying.
Yeah.
But so I don't get stressed. And crazy shit happens all the time in running a company. I don't get stressed.
Wow.
And
I respect that, man.
There's been a couple times when we've almost been out of money, didn't get stressed. I just figured it out. Now we're good.
We should hang out more.
You can call me anytime.
I can learn from your example. Because my dad told me the same thing growing up, but then I felt like a pressure if I did feel stressed, and then I felt stressed about feeling stressed, and had a different sort of response to his messaging, I think, and definitely like being stoic in the face of like chaos is not my strong suit.
Yeah.
So I respect you for that. Well done.
Thank you. Grateful that I'm luckily just kind of wired that way.
Yeah.
Like there is, of course, decisions of optimism and figuring it out that you have to do and force yourself to do.
Yeah.
But also I think I'm kind of just wired this way. So I'm grateful for that.
Just in response to you talking about like, you're saying that you feel like you don't have any of the afflictions that a lot of people deal with, like stress and depression and things like that. That's so interesting. I definitely do. Mm-hmm. And as a Leo, when you're saying like you turn on and it's like a bright flame until the end of the day. So the flame analogy, like I feel like mine is only bright when I'm in company with other people. So I'm like an extrovert.
Extrovert, yeah.
And when I'm alone, it dies down very quickly.
Yeah.
It feels like just the wick of the candle is like barely lit.
Yep.
And I'm trying like as an adult, as an independent, autonomous adult to like fan my own flame without other people like giving me energy. So I was wondering when you were on... You said you took your like first
Hollywood break.
Your Hollywood break. And when you did nothing and you said it didn't feel very good. When you say nothing, what do you mean? Were you looking at your phone? Like, were you staying inside? Like, what were you doing?
Yeah. And where you're saying that you don't like those feelings, that's where I was. Mm. But I don't normally get there because I don't normally let my fire die down.
Yeah.
So doing nothing to me means don't work on business. Mm. Don't. Because sometimes I'll be like, okay, cool, the team is off, but I'm going to brainstorm and think about the plans for the next 2 years and whiteboard.
We're very similar in that way.
And do all that. I'm like, that's time off, right? Or I'll be like, cool, I'm going to study something. I'm going to watch a documentary and then write about it. Or I'm going to go make an album. Or I'm going to practice drums. Or I'm going to go, I'm still going to do something.
Be productive.
Or I'm just going to fill my schedule up with dates or friends or something. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Besides, like, I hung with my family. And like, did nothing. And I didn't like the feeling of letting my fire die down that low. So I wanted to take a phone break and I didn't because I have a real actual phone addiction.
Me too. It's the worst thing ever.
The worst thing ever. Dude, even during the Hollywood break, I still fucking couldn't put my phone down even though I was doing nothing.
It's worse. And you're like, why am I not putting it down? You just fucking keep going. Yeah. Especially if you're posting stuff. Yeah. I feel like when I post stuff and I'm active, I'm like constantly like refreshing or kind of like worried
about. Who commented?
Yeah, exactly.
Is the engagement high?
It's the engagement high.
Do I hide the likes?
Yeah. Do I keep it on my main feed or just stick it on the reels? Oh my gosh, this shit takes way too much of our mental brain space.
That's the only thing that does make me feel depressed is social media.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But then at the same time, it's like you said, like it's the way to connect with people as well. I think most of the people I work with, I've somehow connected with through the internet.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's how you and I, it was just us following each other and then like, you're cool.
Okay. Yeah, it's like how I went on tour with Hozier last year was like DMing him on Instagram.
Okay, wait. So you DM'd Hozier on Instagram and said, can I tour with you?
Well...
It worked.
I mean, he followed me. He had listened to Swan Song. I was like, hey dude, I just saw that you're like announcing tour dates. Like, if you're ever looking for support, I'd love to raise my hand as an option. And he got back to me and he's like, oh my god, I love Swan Song. Like, I would totally love to put you forward. I'll let my management know. And there you go. Just a whole month.
I love that.
Whole summer of touring.
Another reason why you always ask.
Yeah.
Put the ask out there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, what's the harm?
Yeah.
The worst thing is that they see it and forget about it and don't respond or whatever. But actually, I would say pretty much every one of my biggest tours has been an Instagram DM. JP Sachs and like Palm and other artists like that. Mainly JP and Hozier. So yeah, crazy.
So back to having mentors and everything. Mm. So Chris Martin, good mentor.
Yeah.
Good mentor. What is the best lesson you've learned from Chris Martin?
I feel like there are two main messages that he really leads with and lives by. One of which is just to be the most yourself you can be because you're never going to be able to be anyone else. He's always saying like, yeah, I'll never sing like Rihanna or like dance like Michael Jackson or whatever, but I can be me just the way that I am. And the more that I do that, the more like fulfillment I'll find in my life. Yeah. And then the second thing is to make the people around you feel seen and heard, because they deserve that. And seeing him interact with everyone on his team, as well as just people on the street, or you know, like the crew, you know, he sits with the crew on tour. He's like hanging out, you know, he's not in, up in his castle. He's like out here treating people like people. And I think
being a human with other people. Yeah.
And as someone who like has been treated like shit by other people because of the way that I look, or maybe because they don't know who I am or whatever, in an industry where everyone's looking around or searching for the reason as to why they should be talking to you, I think he's like a real grounding, you know, humble presence of like, I talk to you because you're a human being and I will get something out of this on like a human level. Like I will learn from you. I will like connect with you. I will love deeply. Like, and that's what it's for. It's not about some other like ulterior motive. So I love being around him for that reason.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you guys written together?
No, I would never. I would never. I could
you would never.
Yeah, I could never do that. I think I'm way too aware of how my ideas would be perceived. So therefore I wouldn't be relaxed enough to have good ideas.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
You should pull out your phone, send Chris a text message right now. Say, Chris Martin, would you cover Swan Song? Him doing Swan Song?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we do have a little video together of singing it. Have you seen that?
Oh, God, I'm behind.
Yeah, yeah. That's
there good. Goes me. Pay attention, bro.
Do it again.
It's my, like, Eeyore.
It's a fucking great sound.
Thank you.
It's like a Christopher Nolan, like, movie.
If I were you, I'm just kidding. It does not go together.
Oh my God. That's so good. Dude. Yeah. No, the first time I met him, he was like, come play Swan Song. And there is a little video that kind of went viral and I'm surprised you haven't seen it. It's usually the leading thing that people want to talk to me about. But yeah, it's of me playing the piano.
See, I care about your soul. I wanted to talk about your heart.
Yeah. That's very nice. Thank you.
You got to record that though. You got to make the release.
I know he's a busy guy. You know what I mean?
He's got time.
And also like, it's hard. I don't ever really want to like burden anyone with anything.
You're not gonna burden them with
you know. I know maybe something.
Just be like, Chris, treat me like a human.
Just kidding. If you're a good person, you'll cover Swan Song.
I've heard from everybody that he's amazing.
Yeah, he's literally the best.
Yeah.
One time I got COVID and was like quarantining in a hotel and I didn't have anything with me, like no music gear and stuff. And we were texting and he was like, oh my God, you poor thing. Like, do you need anything? Like, what, do you have any music stuff with you? I was like, I have nothing. And then he didn't respond. And an hour later, an SIR rental truck pulled up and a guy hops out and is like, courtesy of Coldplay. And there's just like all the gear you could ever want for the 10 days that I was like quarantining.
So sick.
Dude, the best thing ever. He also like took the time to meet my parents last year. When I was opening for Hozier at a venue in Amsterdam, this arena that's like a two minute walk from a stadium that Coldplay was playing the same night. So I was like coordinating back and forth to the minute to like meet the security person to go up these stairs to then meet. So my dad and Chris could meet, especially because like they're just very alike in many ways. And it was like a dream for me to get them to meet. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. He's a phenomenal person.
Wow.
Phenomenal.
How do you overcome adversity?
I guess by being patient with myself through it and leaning on loved ones around me to support me in that time. But most of all, I think it's like just returning to my inner, like my center, my groundedness. I meditate a lot.
Mm.
And I think when you meditate, you sort of start to realize that everything is surmountable.
Yeah.
You can overcome anything. People have continued to overcome pretty much everything in all of history. And it's like, you ever read Man's Search for Meaning?
Mm-mm.
Viktor Frankl. It's one of my favorite books. And he's a Holocaust survivor. And he talks about how when he was like with other prisoners in that time, they would recite poetry to each other in the middle of the night and dedicate their poetry and songs to the people that they love. I mean, basically just love will get you through it. You know, the love for your own being, the love for the people that you love. Like, I think that's like kind of what gets us through, leaning on each other, community, yeah. Connection. So, yeah.
Community connection is everything.
Yes.
We did it.
Okay, great.
This is awesome. Look, I selfishly wanted to hang with you.
Yeah.
Andrew texted me like, Victoria's going to be in town. I'm like, yeah, we're on the pod.
Book it in. Yes, I
eventually
love
we're going to have you play at the Jam Jam.
Yes, I would love
We've
that.
Tried a few times.
I know we have. Yeah, well, you we've know tried. What? And it will happen, but also yeah. You know that I'm like a little quiet, right?
I've seen you play.
Yeah.
I love it. One of my favorite Jam Jam moments ever was we brought out Jacob Collier, and he brought the audience to silent.
Wow.
And then played two songs, just piano vocal.
Really?
Without the band. And then the band came in and then it became a thing.
Yeah.
But it was a solid, you know, 10, 15 minutes of just Jacob, room silent.
Wow.
It was
you want
amazing.
To do that kind of thing?
Yeah.
I'd love to.
I love the full spectrum, like, of bringing it from, I mean, of course, I love bombastic and I do that a lot. But I love bringing it all the way down. It's yeah. amazing. But it takes someone incredibly captivating to do that. Mm. And I've seen you do it.
Mm. Thank you.
So you are amazing in what you do.
Thank
I'm
you,
I'm a
Dad.
Huge fan.
Yay.
You're such a just beautiful energy and I'm really happy for you. And you're going to have an incredibly successful career.
Oh, thank you.
It's going to keep growing.
That's the plan. Hey, I'm recording my album right now.
I know. I didn't know if we were like not supposed to talk about it. Is it going to come out? Is it? Like,
no, that's okay. I mean, it honestly probably won't come out until a while from now, but okay. I am finishing it by the end of this month.
Okay, I'll be free in a while from now.
But we're going to start trickling out stuff. And speaking of bombastic, man. I got some louder shit. I got drums. I got drums.
There's drums on it?
There's drums on it. There's drums all over this shit.
All over it?
All over, yeah.
I've heard drums in pieces of your songs.
I know. It's like towards the end
yeah.
in the background.
Yeah, mallets.
Yeah, mallets. Yeah. I'm back on the drum train. I am excited about drums.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Oh, wow. Victoria Canal is grooving. Yeah, yeah, send it to me.
I got to send you that. I'll show you this one song maybe before I go. It's called California Sober and it's kind of a banger.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Before you leave, that's great. I'll give you a tour of the house and you call me anytime. Thank if you're you. Feeling stressed.
Okay, I will.
I'm going to help you out.
Expect a call every morning yeah. at 11:45.
I'm like, you get stressed early.
Yeah.
Come on, Leo.
It's 8:30 a.m. Give me a break.
Okay, well.
All right.
Victoria Canal, ladies and gentlemen. Greatest singer-songwriter ever. Listen to this angel's voice everywhere. There's plenty of music already out. There's like two great EPs.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's amazing.
I've had a great time.
Okay.
I'm having a good time.
I'm having a good time. Interview over. Go with Elmo. Go with Elmo. This is the stuff, man.